will gain. Yatangajam, the daughter of whom? Swam, Om. Purusadvet, the enemy of Lord Shiva. Ujjatam, who was preparing. Tlapratyashedat, did not prevent. Mrittaye, for death. Aparadataha, because of his offenses. Translation. Daksha, who is so hard-hearted that he's unworthy to be a Brahmana, will gain extensive ill fame because of his offenses to his daughter, because of not having prevented her death, and because of his great envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. Daksha is described here as most hard-hearted, and therefore unqualified to be a Brahmana. Brahmadruk is described by some commentators to mean Brahmabandhu, or friend of the Brahmanas. A person who is born in a Brahman family but has no brahminical qualification is called a Brahmabandhu. Brahmanas are generally very soft-hearted and forbearing because they have the power to control the senses and the mind. Daksha, however, was not forbearing, for the simple reason that his son-in-law, Lord Shiva, did not stand up to show him the formality of respect. He became so angry and hard-hearted that he tolerated even the death of his dearest daughter. Sati tried her best to mitigate the misunderstanding between the son-in-law and the father-in-law by coming to her father's house, even without an invitation, and at that time, Daksha should have received her, forgetting all past misunderstandings, but he was so hard-hearted that he was unworthy to be called an Aryan or Brahmana. Thus his ill fame still continues. Daksha means expert, and he was given this name because of his ability to beget many hundreds and thousands of children. Persons who are too sexually inclined and materialistic become so hard-hearted because of a slight loss of prestige that they can tolerate even the death of their children. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Ginandana Salakaya Chaksura Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Narati Swaparantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhaktivinna Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Where is Uddhava? So, it is described here that a Brahmana is soft-hearted. It said soft-hearted because he's in control of the senses and the mind. That means he's detached. Therefore, he doesn't have to fight over any material advantage. But one who is attached and is interested in his material advantage has to become strong and becomes influenced by the motive passion. So Brahmana is soft-hearted and tolerant. We see the situation where Jamadagni, the father of Parasuram, somehow or other, Kartavir Arjuna was a Kshatriya who was very, very powerful and who forgot to offer respects to the Brahmanas because he became more and more proud by his own prowess. And in the course of that, he became inimical with the family of Jamadagni and at one point killed his wife. And Parasuram became very, very, very angry. And Parasuram then wanted to take revenge. And we know that he killed all the Kshatriyas
on the planet so many times. But Jamadagni was disapproving because Parasuram was a Brahmana, at least the son of a Brahmana. So there, Jamadagni points out that Kshama, forgiveness, is the quality of the Brahmana. So that is the principal quality of a Brahmana, Kshama. He's forgiving. And therefore, whatever is going on, he tolerates, he forgives, he understands. And we see that in a great man, we see such qualities. And even on the mundane platform, such qualities are respected. Just like in South Africa, you have Nelson Mandela, who was 27 years in jail, and that means in the prime of his life, and then he came out as an old man. And yet, he came out with a message of peace. One word of Mandela cut the heads of the whites, and there would not be one white left in the whole country. Right? Would be just one word. Throw the foreigners out. Right? If he would have just said it, they were ready. You know, they would have eaten them alive. Right? Yeah. Well, they like rubber tires, right? Garlands of rubber tires. That is a South African invention. Whatever may be, he did not do so. He preached forgiveness. He preached that it was great foolishness what happened. It was inappropriate. One man should never treat another man like inferior and so on. But nonetheless, taking revenge is also inferior. So that we cannot do. We should simply correct the mistakes from the past and go on towards a future. So this is brahminical consciousness, brahminical inclination, this kshama, forgiveness, right? But not some sort of naive, sentimental thing where one is not aware of the offenses committed, but one is seeing that anyway we should go upwards from this situation, although it went really down. So Daksha was not acting as a Brahmana. Daksha had become too attached. It said this is the result of sex life. It is interesting that persons who are too sexually inclined and materialistic become so hard-hearted. That is the point that is made. So it is interesting that there is a relationship between the two, between hard-heartedness and being inclined towards sex. The reason is because one becomes more and more obsessed with enjoying his own senses. And when our own senses get prevalence, then that is more important than anything else and anyone else. And then that has to have preference, even if it requires an elbow in the face of our neighbor. That is the nature of being attached to the senses. So therefore, the first thing in spiritual life is sense control. The first thing is that we learn to regulate the senses. In the beginning, it is said one should take only Krishna prasadam, right? And eat nothing but Krishna prasadam as much as he likes, as many times a day as he likes, you know. Can eat 200 times in a day, no problem, right? In the Hare Krishna movement, that's possible, right? 200 different snacks, right, of prasadam, yes? This is indeed recommended, that we take prasadam as much as we want. No limit. That is why Prabhupada in his early days had a pot with gulab jamuns, right, which was always full in the temple. I think that if you introduce this again in Amsterdam, that will be a great success, right? There was in the corner of the temple room one pot, and that pot was always filled with gulab jamuns. And if you don't know what gulab jamuns are, then you haven't lived. What can we say? You have not yet lived. Right. So, this system is very, very nice of having prasadam available to the devotees. But then, after some time, one is supposed to take prasadam only at regular times, right? At regular meals, and not eat outside the meals. And then it comes to a point where one will never eat outside the meals, right? That's it. And that's very powerful, right? One simply takes prasadam at fixed times, that's all. Once, twice, that's it. Yes. And if we do so, that will help us to control the senses. So a devotee is following this path of controlling the senses. And he learns to control the pushings of the senses. Vachavegam, manasakrodavegam, jivavegam, udrapastavegam, etanvegam, yuvisahetadiram, sarvamavimam, petivimsasisya. The pushings of the senses are very strong. So what is required is regulation. Therefore we're seeing that in India, traditionally, people are rising very early. And in India, at 10 o'clock at night, it's over, right? It's night, it's dead, you know, the streets are totally, quieted down. And of course, not in a city like Delhi or Bombay, that's different. But in a smaller town, that's it. Nothing going on after 10. Because everyone is up, it's like 5, right? You see all people in the road, brushing their teeth, or they go to the railway line, right, to relieve themselves early in the morning, somehow or other. There is such a tradition to go to the railway line. Why, we don't know. But if you drive in the train, you get the darshan of hundreds of people doing it early in the morning. Why, we don't know. This is old tradition. But whatever may be, that regulation of rising very early is very much part of the tradition. So this is also part of the culture of controlling the senses. Controlling the senses begins with spiritual practices early in the morning. That controls our mind, and the mind is the seat of the senses. So that is required. So that regulation is needed. So Brahmana is not just a Brahmana. Here it is stated that there is Brahmana and Brahma Bandhu. One who is the relative of a Brahmana is a Brahma Bandhu. One who is born in a Brahmin family is a Brahma Bandhu. But one who is actually having brahminical qualifications. So it is not merely a matter of qualifications, but there are also many brahminical practices and duties that a Brahmin is meant to be performed. So this is to be, this is what we have to strive for. Prabhupada particularly wanted that through this movement we would again create brahmanas. And Prabhupada's aim was to create brahmanas from low-class men. And he said, it's an emergency, so we have to somehow or other attempt to create brahmanas. He said, although it may take several generations, it may take several generations. And we used to think, wow, several generations, that's amazing. What's it going to be like, you know? In a few generations, we heard maybe some of the brahmanas will be so powerful that they can again light the fire by mantra. Right? But now we understand it's not just a matter of lighting the fire by mantra, but that is simply a matter of being pure and tolerant and humble. Right? Really being humble. Srila Prabhupada explains that being humble is a matter of understanding our position. He said we cannot artificially imagine that we are lower than a blade of grass. We can tell ourselves that we are more insignificant than the blade of grass, but he says it will not work. He says, but if we understand that we are not the body, and that we are the spirit soul, and that the spirit soul is 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair, then one can understand that he's much smaller than a blade of grass. So then one can naturally see oneself as so insignificant. That is why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is praying, please place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. Not, you know, my Lord, here I am, your devotee, right? Please give me your shelter, right? I am your bhakta, yes, and the Lord kindly offered shelter. No, place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. That means the most insignificant thing. There's nothing smaller at a lotus feet than an atom, right? So place me as the most insignificant particle. I cannot say I am nothing. I'm something, but I'm the most insignificant. Just like I like that statement where Satsarup Das Goswami said to Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, I'm nothing. And that Prabhupada said, you're not nothing, you're something, but you're not what you think you are. It's like, I just, that was chak, chak, chak. So it's like the false ego was being chopped very quickly and effectively. So yes, we are an atom, but that's all we are. That's really what we are, the anujiva, the atomic jiva. Not that the jiva is atom, right? At least we cannot establish that point conclusively. Although some indications are there, still we have some fundamental problems with that point. Although the point is raised sometimes, and recently I heard a discussion from amongst some senior Vaishnava. One sannyasi also was involved in the discussion and said, yes, the atoms may be living entities, could be, but then again, could also not be, right? So that point is not the point. But that the living entity is atomic in size, that is important. That is priority. That is very important to know, because that will bring us to the point of humility. That will bring us to, if we meditate on that we are atomic in size and insignificant, then we can actually become soft-hearted. Humility and soft-heartedness are very much, very, very, very much connected. One must be very humble, then one can be tolerant. Then one can, otherwise there's no question of being tolerant. If I'm thinking that I'm somebody, then something's going to happen that I feel like, well, this is, you know, how can this happen to me? You know, I mean, how can they do this to me? How can they behave like this to me? Don't they know who I am? Right, naturally. Right? But if you think, well, I'm just, you know, insignificant, so it doesn't really matter what they do to me. It doesn't matter. It's not so important. So if we take this spirit of not like looking for that kind of recognition, that is very nice. Still, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives a description of the guru who is like a brute, the brute is sitting on a raised seat, right? And is hearing his glories being proclaimed publicly, right? Indulging, right? Is it like, I mean, see him in his vanity. See him just completely overwhelmed, in his arrogance. See him, the brute, right? But then he points out, no, it is not like that. Actually, if we look closer, we see that he is only accepting that, right, to maintain a respect for knowledge, because he is the embodiment of the knowledge which comes from the Supreme Lord, because he's become the devotee of the Supreme Lord, and therefore he is dedicated to the teachings of the Supreme Lord, and he will not act ever in an unauthorized way. He will only act in such a way as is authorized by the Lord, and nothing but that, never. And therefore, he must take a raised seat and other paraphernalia of respect, simply because the knowledge of the Lord is to be given the highest place. We, the carriers, the messengers, are not so important. It is the message that is important. It is the Supreme Lord that is important. It is Krishna that is not important. That is important. That is the essence. Not so much the individual. So this is the main principle, that we are developing humility. It cannot be done merely on the intellectual plane. It can only be achieved if we act in that way. So part of humility means to never seek glory and to give all glory to others. And this is our main mission. Then one can forgive. We're seeing that great personalities can forgive. We're seeing that Dhruva Maharaj could forgive. Dhruva Maharaj was 5 years old. He was the son of a king who had two wives. His mother was not the favorite one of the king. So one day, one of the sons, Dhruva's brother, was sitting on the lap of his father. So Dhruva also wanted to sit on the lap of his father. Then the co-wife said, no, you cannot sit on the lap of the king, because you are not born from my womb. Dhruva became quite upset about that. Then Dhruva said, what can I do? He went crying to his mother, said, what can I do about it? His mother said, there's nothing we can do because I am not the favorite of the king. No one can help you. But he was determined. So finally she said, no one can help you but the Supreme Lord. He said, okay, where is the Supreme Lord? In the forest you will find him. Okay. He went to the forest, performed the greatest austerity, and became very powerful and got the darshan and the mercy of the Lord. Then when Dhruva came back, Dhruva was very, very much absorbed in love of God. And he forgave his stepmother, although she mistreated him. He did not, when he was returning from the forest, his father was happy to see him. And at that time, he could have taken revenge. He didn't do so. He didn't do so. He didn't take revenge. He had no desire to take revenge. And because he was so forgiving, his stepmother became also overwhelmed. And actually, he offered his obeisances to her, right? Instead of ignoring her, which would have been, the least, right? The least was like, well, I'm not talking to her. She's the one, who's got me, who denied me to sit in my father's lap. I don't see her anymore, She, as far as I'm concerned, she doesn't exist. Huh? That's the least. But he didn't do that. When he came, he paid obeisances to her. So when he did that, she was so overwhelmed, she offered him blessings and she offered him a long life and, she became totally melted. Yes. So, this is the Vaishnava spirit, right? Forgiving and not taking misbehavior so serious and somehow or other being kind. Even when it's not really legitimate, is a Vaishnava still kind. And that is the thing about Vaishnavas, right? I mean, we're talking about the ideal. And it's the amazing thing is Vaishnavas are just forgiving even when there's no reason to do it. They're kind even when, it's like beyond logic. They are generous when nothing has been done yet. No work. I mean, somebody's worked hard, really hard. Okay. you know, you feel kind of, I'll give him something extra because he did his best. I'll give it to him. But Vaishnava already gives when nothing has been done. That is Vaishnava. So we have to have this mood, and that is our movement. That is why initially the Sunday feast was free. It was totally free, and it was not just free, it was of the highest quality. It was extraordinary. I mean, the feasts were just the biggest, right? The biggest and the best. Right? Every Sunday, it was like, you know, nectar, which was being produced in huge quantities, right? A huge variety. So much effort was being made, and there was no holding back. So everyone immediately could taste like, wow, this is like something else, you know. Not like, well, no charging, right? That came in later, right? The charging, much, much later. Prabhupada didn't start that system. Because Prabhupada had this spirit of giving even when there was no reason to do so, right? And that conquered hearts. Yes. So the Sunday love feast, as Prabhupada called it, was a very important element for the growth of this movement. Right? There's no doubt about it that this movement has grown through that process. How to manage it, that's another matter. Right? Many people then came with smelly feet and with, other smells, right? Smelly everything, right? Who had no money and who didn't mind, you know, the free meals and the whole thing, the free feast, you know. And at one point the smell was too strong and other guests stayed away. So what to do? So gradually some segregation started to come, you know, where the smelly ones were kept in smelly places and the less smelly ones in more pleasant places. So how to manage, I don't know. And I'm also not criticizing the present policies that one might charge or not or whatever. That's up to the management of a particular temple. I stay out of that. But I just want to illustrate the principle of conquering the hearts by being so generous, by giving so much, and that is the Vaishnava spirit, and that the underlying principle is that beyond reason, kindness, generosity, forgiveness, beyond reason, and that's what we have to become, and that's what I'm calling for. Right? And that's my point, actually. That we have to go to this level where we go out of our way. And that is what Prabhupada did. Right? And that's where he was different. Everyone else was reasonable. You know, every other Vaishnava was kind of reasonable. Well, you know, okay. If somebody is behaving reasonably well, then certainly we'll give him the mercy. Right? But if somebody is like just too outrageous, what can we do? And some places are just too outrageous. And, you know. But Prabhupada went to America, to the most outrageous place, dealing with the most outrageous people, right? In the lowest areas. Right? And because of this spirit. And that's the only thing that will conquer. That will conquer. And we have to also have it. But it is funny how we, who came ourselves from the lowest and who were forgiven, right, for everything that we did, that we don't have that same forgiveness that Prabhupada had, that we don't have that same generosity and that same spirit to embrace all kinds of people. They go, well, this one's too much, that one's not enough, and so on, right? And in that way, we are not all-inclusive. Whereas Prabhupada is so all-inclusive and giving so much quality to those who were so unqualified. And that is very powerful because it kind of wakes up it brings out the better quality. Just like sometimes you see that in the reformation of prisoners who have been in jail and so on, that there is one person who puts faith in them, right? Who actually puts faith in them and tries to trust them for the first time, give some trust and tries to bring out the better person, try and find that spark of honesty in someone who's otherwise become bitter because of a world which is nasty and been treated nasty and therefore will treat the world nasty, and you know, it's just a rat race. And then just someone who breaks through that, right, by trying to bring out the good quality. So this is what Vaishnava does. This is what Vaishnava does. Vaishnava looks for that quality. Jagai could appreciate Lord Nityananda's good quality. He could appreciate that Lord Nityananda did not get angry, although his head was smashed and bleeding by Madai, who hit him with the wine pot. You know, the two drunken brothers, and here comes this Nityananda who asks him to chant Hare Krishna, you know, like, he's like, what is this, you know, like, this is ridiculous, get out of here, you know, like, bah! Smash, right? Blood dripping like anything, and you know, a head injury bleeds very intensely, so there must have been quite some blood. But Lord Nityananda remained very positive. That touched Jagai. It brought out the better quality. So that is there, and that is the way that we are going to deal with the residents of Kali Yuga, by being kind. We cannot be harsh. We cannot say, well, let the material energy, let the material energy purify them. What to do? They're not ready yet, you know. They have to be beaten a little more. If Prabhupada would have said that, you know, about us, right? You know, where would we be now? Just like that situation in Africa where Garga Muni was saying that, these Negroes, Srila Prabhupada, they are really fallen. And how Prabhupada said, from my perspective, you are a white Negro. Right? So we are white Negroes. Right? That's a fact. Did you ever think of yourself like a white Negro? Right? Brown Negro. You know? You're a Negro? Did you ever think of yourself like Negro, African man? Huh? But from Prabhupada's perspective, we are Negroes. Right? Fallen. Fallen. Fallen souls. Everyone is fallen soul. So, everyone is trying to establish that he's no less than anybody else. And that's a fact. Nobody is any less than anybody else, because everybody is low, the lowest in this age. So everyone's equal. That's not a problem, right? Everyone's the loco, the lowest. Just like sometimes women are making it an issue that they want to be equal to men. And my point is, that's not what's going on. That men have long ago become equal to women. That's my point. Yes. And not that I'm down on women. I'm down on conditioned souls, right? I'm down on uncontrolled senses. I'm down on sinful activity. I'm down on illicit sex. Right? I'm down on birth and death. I'm down on the material world. Right? Let's get out of here. That's all. Right? So, somehow or other, when there is no more structure and no more control, then everything automatically goes down to the lowest level. And that is what we have now. Yeah. Everything has automatically gone down to the lowest level. And it's happening everywhere. In India also, Brahminical culture has collapsed. The Brahmins, where are they? It's just a joke. Panditji, ha ha ha. Right? Some Panditji, you know, is doing something. You see some Brahmana walking around with a little tray, you know, and they have their little Durga deity or something, and everyone gets a dot, you know, and then they collect a few paisas, right, from the shops. Everyone knows, Panditji, a teak, teak, Panditji, lilo, take it, take some paisa, Panditji, no problem, Panditji. But who takes Panditji serious? No one. But previously, the brahmanas, right, the sages, they were a presence, right? And if anyone was not giving them the most prominent place, it was an offense, right? The brahmana would come, he would get the raised seat. The brahmana would speak. Kings would stand with folded hands to listen, right? Brahmanas were strong and authoritative, not just soft and pushovers like modern day brahmanas in India, you know, just push them out of the way, you know. Get out of the way, Panditji. Now we're going to do some business here. Right? What's Panditji going to do, you know? So in India also, and in the Western world, we don't even know about these things. So we are living in a society where everyone and everything has gone down to the lowest level. So we need to bring in culture, and this movement has to do that. And therefore, collectively, we have to embrace Brahminical culture. Okay. I have now 5 minutes left, so any questions?
I like your point very much that we should be very tolerant and humble in accepting behavior, even if we find it hard to digest. Well, I have an example, and it's completely hypothetical. Any resemblance with persons is completely
coincidental. it looks like the bottom of an email message.
Now, suppose people are coming to a temple for years, and they're not really respectful, and they refuse to clean up the plates, wash the plates.
Definitely. We should be firm. It's not that everyone has to be treated equally, but we should not fully cut somebody off of the mercy. As long as there is some inclination that a person is looking for the mercy, we have to consider that we should not just back in the material world, you know. And of course, sometimes this movement attracts many people, and some people like this movement very much. They like the prasadam, they like the temple, they like the devotees, but they don't like the principles, they don't like the practices, and they're just not serious about them. They don't follow any practices, they don't follow any principles, and they just come around and they take it like some sort of social club, you know. And they hang around like that. And then they start to, sometimes they become very overbearing, and they bring their mundane atmosphere into the temple, right? And they don't bring, and there's no spirituality at all. And no matter how many times you tell them, they're so thick, right, that they don't give up their materialistic ways. And in this way, they become undesirable association, because they bring in a mundane atmosphere and which begins to overshadow the spiritual atmosphere. So what to do? Then we may have to restrict such people, right? But we cannot fully cut them off. And if somebody misbehaves so much that we say, well, for the time being, we're not talking to this guy, right? But if he comes back after some time in a little more humble mood, we'll again give a chance. We'll again give a chance. Yeah. And even if he's been the biggest rascal, even if he walked away with a huge amount of money and you know, and all this, how many have we had, right? Who walked away with tens of thousands, right? And then come back 2 years later. Sorry, you know. Sorry. No, we don't give him the key anymore. No, that's right. But, you know, and in some cases even the ones we say, well, you know, maybe you should start paying it back, you know. Huh? You should start paying something, you know. Maybe. So we may not just be naive, you know, and say, oh, well, you know, forgiveness, forgiveness. No, we forgive, but we must also, in some cases, people have to become repentant. Right? You can just forgive, 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 but you have to look at the results also. You know, it has to give good results. If your forgiveness is just supporting someone's misbehavior, right? Then your forgiveness is no longer beneficial. So then you have to find another formula to express your forgiveness. But the spirit, the deeper underlying spirit of forgiveness remains. Mm. So Prabhupada would say, rascal, right? Rascal. So there are rascals who need to be chastised sometimes. That's also very kind. But you can say your last word, right?
There's this comparison with the battlefield that there might be a lot of wounded, some less wounded than some seriously wounded. So where is the doctor going?
Anyway, but there are different doctors, you know. There are different doctors. And then some doctors, they walk on that battlefield, they see somebody lying there and crying, saying, God, I know I should go to one less wounded, but I can't just walk past this person suffering so much. I gotta do something. You know what I mean? So I'll work a little harder and I'll try and save this one as well, you know? Okay, I'll work twice as hard as any other doctor, but I'm gonna try and save them all. Right? I'm gonna do it. But, so, you know. Yeah, but then again, you know, like, it is true that the living entity is not impartial like Krishna. So, the living entity is partial. He is choosing certain jivas, right? He's not just giving it to all. It's like, so both have to be there. Sometimes we have to do work which is pouring it out for the masses, and other times we have to just give all our time for one person. We should say, like, you know, so much prime time of a big man given to one little person who's not even serious. But this is the nature of the jiva. That he is inclined particular towards one jiva, right? Whereas the Supreme Lord is impartial. He's all-pervading. He's merciful to all the time. But the nature of the jiva is to become, of the enlightened jiva, is to become merciful to one particular jiva. That inclination is there. And it still stays in a self-realized person. Gaura, last and not least.
It's not from my directly from my books, but I heard the expression that not forgiving someone is like drinking poison yourself and wishing someone else will die. So actually, we're hurting ourselves by not forgiving.
Right. Yeah.
It's in our own interest, in other words, to forgive.
Anyway, it's very difficult. But we can learn to forgive if we begin to see, one, our own insignificance, two, that we are also not free from fault, and three, that even if people have faults that we don't have, that still it's simply due to association with the material energy, and that we shouldn't look so much at that conditioned side of a person, at the disease, right? We have to become merciful like doctors, you know, who tolerate terrible wounds and smelly diseases, you know, like bodies that are